So this is the Chitrakavitvani found in Rupa Goswami's Stavamala. So we're going to be looking at 12 verses today. Now this word Chitra has two meanings. Either it can mean like adbhut, very amazing, or it can mean like a picture. So the first four verses are going to be very amazing, and we'll see why in a minute. And the last eight verses are going to be picture verses. So Stavamala was a work composed by Rupa Goswami. Actually, it wasn't written all at one time. He didn't sit down and write it at a stretch. It was different stavas that he composed, sometimes while walking through the forest of Vrindavan, sometimes really sitting down and carefully constructing them like these ones. And it was actually Jiva Goswami who later compiled all of those prayers into this book, Stavamala. So it's a garland of stavas. Now, stava is generally translated as a prayer, but it's a special kind of a prayer, actually. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the Eastern Ocean, Jiva Goswami comments, what's the difference between a stava and a stotra? He says there that a stotra, both of these words, stava and stotra, come from the Sanskrit dhatu stu, which means to praise. But what's the difference? A stotra is a prayer composed by previous acharyas that one recites for the pleasure of the Lord, whereas a stava is one's own personal outpouring of one's heart to the Lord. It's one's personal offering. So these are Rupa Goswami's personal outpourings. It's his garland of stavas. So in this, in making this presentation, in translating these verses, we followed Baladeva Vidyabhushana's Sanskrit commentary, which is called Stavamala Bhushana, named after Baladeva Vidyabhushana. So this is actually the last work written by Baladeva Vidyabhushana, this commentary on Stavamala. And we see here, we're used to his more philosophical side, but we see here his wonderful poetic side at the same time. So let's begin. So the first verse is amazing because he's going to use words which only have the consonants ra and sa. So let's have a look. So here, Rupa Goswami desires to describe a particular topic, which is the rasa dance, actually. So because the word rasa has the consonants ra and sa in it, so all the other words he's going to choose to describe the rasa dance with are also going to have only the consonants ra and sa. We can't actually do this in English. These are what we would call transcendental tongue twisters. Like we learned some mundane ones when we were kids. She sells seashells by the seashore or something like that. Something which is difficult to pronounce fast. So similarly, these verses, can be quite difficult to read and very difficult to compose. So this is about the rasa dance. And we see many other words that we're familiar with. Rasa, asura, samsara, etc. Sarasa, a lotus flower, all composed of the consonants ra and sa. But somebody may ask at this point, what about that H with a dot underneath it? And what about that M with a dot on top? Don't they look like consonants? Well, actually, in the Sanskrit alphabet, those two letters, the M and the H with the dots, they're listed in between the vowels and the consonants, and they're considered neutral. They could be considered vowels or consonants. So for the purpose of these verses, they're considered vowels. So there really is only two consonants here. So not only is it a transcendental tongue twister, but you can see which kind of meaning he's manage to bring out in such constricting circumstances?
Filled with transcendental amorous desire, the son of Nanda, who showers forth nectar, whose thighs are strong, who is the enemy of the demons, and who is the sword that cuts down the cycle of repeated birth and death, entered the rasa dance holding a lotus flower.
Okay, so here's the second verse. In this verse we're going to see the consonants cha and ra, only they will be used.
Please read it again.
Okay, so the key word here, just like in the last verse the key word was rasa, the key word here is chora, Krishna's a thief. So we'll see how the translation goes.
Acting like a thief, the broad-chested son of Nanda, the most handsome person in the world, quickly stole the gopi's garments. He was attractive because of his splendor, and his beauty was enhanced by the sandal paste adorning him.
Okay, this is a two-consonant verse again, with the consonants dha and ra. Word here is the second word, dhara dhara dharam, which is a synonym of basically giridhari. The phrase here, the key word is giridhari. So what's interesting is there is a really neat play in words that Rupa Goswami is using here. In Sanskrit we have one verbal root, dhri, which means to hold or to maintain. So we have, if you look at the second word, in the word for word, we have Dhara, which is the name of the earth. And she's called Dhara from the Dhatu tree because she maintains all the living entities on her surface. And then you have mountains, and they're called Dhara Dharas because they nourish or support the earth in various ways. For example, they create precipitation which creates rainfall, or they shelter the valleys from the winds and so on. In various ways they maintain or support the earth. And then Krishna, he's called Dhara Dhara Dharam because he's holding the mountain, Giriraj. So he's, in effect, he's the holder of the holder of the holder, because, as you can see. And then we have this next word, dhara dhara, again from the same dhatu tree, to hold. So this first word, dhara, means a shower, a heavy rainfall. And dhara means something which holds that or contains that. So clouds are called dhara-dharas because they contain a heavy shower in them. So Govardhan is described here as the hill that was blocking this heavy, forceful attacks of the clouds. The clouds were sending rain, hail, thunderbolts, and so on. Actually, in this regard, there's a very interesting explanation that Baladev Vijayabhushana gives of the name Govardhana. Because also in this Stavamala, Rupa Goswami wrote a Govardhana Ashtakam in this Stavamala, and there he prays to Govardhana, "Oh Govardhan, you have earned your name." And Baladev Vijayabhushana explains that phrase, and he says, he gives a very interesting alternate explanation of Govardhan. He quotes the dictionary, and which gives 10 different meanings of the word go. And one of those meanings is actually a thunderbolt. Less common meaning, but nonetheless a valid meaning. So go can mean a thunderbolt. Usually we understand vardhana to come from the verbal root vrid, which means to nourish or to expand. And usually we understand that Govardhan Hill gives nourishment to the cows, expands the number of the cows, etc. But if you, instead of making it from vrid, if you make it from vard, which means to smash, then Govardhan becomes a name that means, "Oh, you who smash the thunderbolt." Because in poetry, the thunderbolt and the mountain are eternal enemies. The thunderbolt clips off the wings of the mountains and they fall to the ground and they become stuck as mountains. So Govardhan is that hill. This is why he's Giriraja, one of the reasons. He's the king of the hills because he's that hill who on behalf of all the other hills has taken revenge against their eternal enemy, the thunderbolt, and he smashed the thunderbolt. When the thunderbolt was hitting Giriraj, it wasn't Giriraj that was feeling the pain, it was the thunderbolt that was feeling the pain. So we'll hear the translation.
Beneath Govardhan Hill, which was blocking the forceful attack of the devastating clouds, steady-minded Radha worshipped the Supreme Lord, who held up the hill and removed the anguish of his devotees.
Okay, now this one's really chitra. This is really amazing. He's done a verse using only one consonant, the consonant na. This is a real tongue twister.
Even has meaning.
That's really amazing. Again, so the key phrase here is the word last word, the word nanu. And whenever we see this word in Sanskrit, it means that there's a argument going on, there's a debate going on. Nanu indicates what we call a purva paksha, the opposition's opinion. So at this phrase. At this stage, somebody is stepping in and saying, "Why are you offering so much praise to Krishna, who's just a small cowherd boy?" So the word nanu, as you can see in the word for word, is a rebuttal. "Oh, you objector. Oh, you disputant. Hear what we have to say."
And this is what we have to say. This is what Rupa Goswami has to say. Did not the many-headed Lord Brahma, who impels the various demigods, offer prayers with tears streaming down his face, trying to pacify Lord Krishna, the killer of Sakatasura?
Okay, so as you mentioned, the first four verses were chitra, meaning that they're amazing. He only used two consonants or even one consonant to compose the verse. Now we're resorting to the other meaning of the word chitra, which means picture. So our first picture verse is the chakrabandha, the wheel formation. So this is what the verse looks like in Devanagari. It's the form of a chariot wheel. So we'll show you how to read this verse in the picture. So here it comes. Okay, so it's a little difficult when composing these verses because certain syllables have to be shared. Like, for example, you see that ni in the circle right in the middle? That has to be used three times. And whatever's at the end of a spoke, like ga, I've used the pointer here, like these syllables, ga, sa, sa, tum, kum, they have to be used twice also. So when composing these verses, not only do we have to fit things in the meter, if you've tried to compose a Sanskrit verse before, sometimes we're asked to compose pranam verses for new sannyasis, or it's very difficult actually to compose a verse because you have a meter you have to fit into, and that's a pattern of short and long syllables. For example, in the Brahma Sanghita meter, you have to fit in the pattern. Which is a certain pattern of short syllables and long syllables. Like in Krishna's name, Ajita, it's three short syllables. But in Radha, it's two long syllables. So you have to fit into like a Morse code pattern. You have to choose words which fit into that arrangement. It's really difficult to do. And then to, on top of that, make everything fit into a picture, this set picture format. And then on top of that, to make it have any kind of meaning, it's an accomplishment. And then to see such a kind of meaning as this, it's beyond material intelligence. Rupa Goswami is an absolute genius. Oh, there's an extra part, yeah.
In a secluded forest, which attracts swarms of maddened bees with its fragrance, which contains many decorated paths, and which gives pleasure with its cool breezes, I always glorify a certain Lord in order to attain spiritual bliss. That rasa-laden Lord, the maintainer of his devotees, is flooded with the splendor of many necklaces. His arms are like snakes. He immediately increases the agitation within the heart, and he tinges the luster of the Yamuna's waves with the luster of his nails, lips, yellow cloth, necklaces, bracelets, and crowns.
Okay, that's not all. With this verse, there was another amazing feature that's hidden inside. So an extra speciality of this verse is that Rupa Goswami has ingeniously placed a hidden signature inside the spokes of the wheel. The signature is not apparent in the verse. It becomes visible only when the verse is drawn in the wheel formation. So if we look at the inner spokes of the wheel, we see this phrase, Krishna Stuti Rasau Rupa Virachita, which means this prayer to Krishna was composed by Rupa. Actually, this was not in Baladev's commentary. We just happened to chance upon it when we were drawing up the verse. We just happened to see, oh, I wonder if there's anything in the inner spokes of this wheel. Because it's not a standard feature of this verse. And I almost fell off my seat when I saw this hidden signature of Rupa Goswami. And I thought, that's amazing. And you can't actually see it. When you look at the four-line verse, you can't see this signature at all. You can't figure out how it's there. But when you draw it here, it becomes apparent. Okay. Okay, so this is the snake formation here. We're going to start with the snake's head and we're going to come out through his tail. So this will be our first syllable here and we'll go like this. So let's see the first line in action. Prashanta Maritin can guide us through the process. I'll point you through the process. Thank you. Okay. You may have noticed there that we did a little loop here around the snake's curly tail. Na-lina. So we shared this syllable twice. And there's going to be some other shared syllables. Actually, one amazing thing about this verse, the particular meter that this verse is composed in is called Shraddhara, which means wearing a garland. Rupa Goswami chose to, he's very playful when he's composing these verses, so he chose the first line of this verse to describe Krishna who is wearing a garland. So the contents of the verse match the name of this verse's meter, Shraddhara. So you can see in this first line, whose garland is, he's wearing a garland of lotuses on his chest, swarm, surrounded by a swarm of bees. So far we've gotten up to here, and let's see how the second line goes. Okay, and the third line? Okay, actually it stops at Agna. And then the fourth line. Okay, so we've come out the snake's tail by now. So, this is very difficult to make this verse work. Basically, whenever you see these squares, the corner ones, like these, have to be shared. And the snake's tail is shared. Se is the last syllable of the verse, and it's the second syllable, ra se saranga sara. So, very difficult to fit the meter, to fit this this picture, and to make, keep in mind all of these syllables that have to be used two or three times each in different places. So let's see the meaning, the most astounding meaning.
To increase his glory, Lord Gopala, who is adorned with peacock feathers, ornaments, necklaces, and splendid, spotless, multicolored tilak, shone brilliantly when he saw the rasa dance arena. His chest was decorated with a fresh lotus garland, attracting many bees, and he was smiling broadly in response to the auspicious, pleasing sounds made by his devotees. Steady at heart and eternally young, he expanded himself into many forms during the dancing.
Okay, so in this lotus, we're going to start in the middle, from the stem of the lotus, and we're going to go out like this, and come back in like this, and again we'll go out, and come back into the middle. So there'll be a lot of, again, shared syllables. We'll be using these syllables coming in, da, lo, ka, and then we'll use them going out, but in the reverse order, ka, lo, da.
In reverse.
Yeah. So you have to have the same things, words which mean one thing one way, and another thing another way. Really difficult. That's why this genre of poetry, another name for it, one name is Chitra Kavi 20, it's amazing, or it's an amazing picture. Another name, the original name found in the Agni Purana, is Dushkara, which literally means difficult to compose. Okay, so Prashanta Manaji, can we get you to sing again, and I'll point.
Plus sweet meaning. O Lord, who speaks sweetly. O Lord, seen by the saintly devotees. O supreme artist. O protector. O you who appeared wonderful carrying a morsel of food. O Lord, followed by Shiva. O Lord, prayed to by Brahma. O cowherd boy, please appear before me.
Okay, this is a special kind of kavya called Viloma Kavya, which reads the same forwards and backwards. This is one verse which is going to have the same meaning and the same pronunciation, whether we read it forwards or backwards. And there's even some books in Sanskrit that are whole books written that you can read forward and you can read them backwards. When you read forward, it's a whole Ram Lila pastime from beginning to end. And when you read it backwards, it's Krishna Lila. It really shows that Kali Yuga intelligence is degrading, because it's just not even possible to do these things anymore. Okay, so in verses, things are usually broken up into syllables, which means a consonant along with the vowel. So the consonant ta along with the vowel a is the syllable ta. So that's the first syllable. Similarly, the second syllable is yi, third syllable is sa. So we're going to see now how we're going to reverse the order, but in terms of syllables. So just like ta is the first syllable, ta is also the last syllable. Just like yi is the second syllable, yi is also the second last syllable. Sa, third last. So what we're going to do now, we're going to show you how this verse can be, we can get the same verse by reading it backwards. So Prashanta Maharaj is going to read it, and I'm going to point backwards. I'm going to help you to read the verse backwards. So if your eyes are fast enough, you can compare that it's really the same thing both ways. Okay.
Yeah.
she was reading it backwards.
The presiding deity of the rasa dance with the gopis. The presiding deity of the rasa dance with the gopis appears splendid, being adorned with a charming garland. His beauty is enhanced by his holding of Govardhan Hill, which is increasing in size due to the great ecstasy it feels from his touch. That handsome deity, the killer of his arrogant enemies, relished a sweet rasa from Radha's worship.
So this is an unusual picture. This is a a carry-your-own picture. Okay, so as we know, there's a lot of analogies in nature. So when I say zigzagging, one of the images that comes to mind is how the bull passes urine. It comes out in a zigzag fashion. So we're going to see here how we'll read the verse in a similar zigzag fashion. So this is our zigzag verse. Okay, so this verse, this is an elaboration on the Srimad Bhagavatam verse Malanam Ashinir, the verse that describes how when Krishna walked into the wrestling arena, different people perceived him in different ways. This particular verse is an elaboration on the phrase Strinam Smaro Murtiman, that for the women, he was perceived as Cupid personified. Okay, so the first line of this verse will be read in this zigzag fashion, and the second line like this. So as Prashanta Maharaji sings it, we'll point the way. So all of these ones in the middle, in the diamonds, they're all shared syllables. They're used twice, so again, it's difficult to compose that. So let's hear the meaning.
In the wrestling arena, the presiding deity of the rasa dance with all the gopis became satisfied. He was desired by all the women there. His strength had blossomed, he was elated, and he was perspiring due to fatigue.
Okay, so this is the drum formation. It's Muraja is the name of this drum. It's not like the Bengali call. You'll see that the straps are arranged in a different fashion. This is like the what we'd call in North India the pakawaj, or South India the mridanga. In South India, the mridanga has a wooden body and it has two sides that are about equal size. And you may have seen that they play it on the right side. They have one special hit that they do, which makes a ping noise. So this is that drum that they use in classical music performances. Okay, so this verse could either be quite straightforward if we read it, like the four lines can be read like this, or we can get the same four lines by reading them like this. We can get the first line like this. So either we can get it by going straight across or like this. We can get the second line like that, third like that, and fourth like that. So again, when composing this verse, you have to make it fit in two ways.
Show it.
We'll show it. This is the first line. Prabha Sandra Masarabha, like that, second line. Third line, Bharasa Mahasavitta. And fourth line, Tarasa Rasasavitam.
And with pure transcendental, ecstatic, exalted meaning, too. His bodily luster, like that of a splendid sapphire. The presiding deity of the rasa dance with the gopis, the destroyer of the burden of the earth, from whom comes opulence, fitness, and a shower of auspiciousness, quickly and gloriously produced an abundance of rasa.
So we saw before one that reads the same forwards and backwards. Now this one's going to read the same forwards and backwards and up and down as well. That's why it's called Sarvato Bhadra. It's good on every side. It's also called the magic box for a reason you'll see in a minute. So this is the magic box. You can read the first line either across or back this way or down or up or across here, back here, up here, down here. You can basically get it in eight different ways. For example, the first line, if I just read it across, is Rasavaha Havasara. And I can get the same thing by doing it backwards. Rasavaha Havasara, down. Rasavaha Havasara, or up. Rasavaha Havasara. Rasavaha Havasara, Rasavaha Havasara, Rasavaha Havasara, Rasavaha Havasara, Rasavaha Havasara, Rasavaha Havasara. You can keep going if you like. That's it. And similarly, the second line, we can start in the conventional forwards order. Salala sa salala sa, salala sa salala sa. Salala sa salala sa, salala sa salala sa, salala sa salala sa, salala sa salala sa, Sa-la-la-sa-sa-la-la-sa. So you can... this one's really almost impossible to make. And the meaning is, again, very wonderful.
Oh.
Yes. Actually, we're going to see... we can take a subsection of this and read it in another way also. If we read it like this, see, we can read it forwards and backwards. Basically what it is that the half of the line, rasavaha, is reversed, havasara. Similarly, salalasa, when reversed, becomes salalasa. So in every line, even the half of a line is a reverse of the other half. So you can also read it like this. Rasavaha havasara, rasavaha havasara.
And this is in the sections.
Yeah. So it's a magic box within a magic box.
Yeah, it is chitra. And after this presentation, we're all going to be asked to write these. Tomorrow. The meaning. That handsome deity, the initiator of the rasa dance, who gained strength from the coquettish gesture of women, sported wonderfully. Filled with amorous desire and taking pleasure in his own strength, he wouldn't tolerate being subdued by anyone else because he was intoxicated with the pride of youth, and his smiles and laughter defeated Cupid.
So we did the small lotus formation before. Now we're going to do a big one. This looks scary. But we have a friendly ball to guide the way. So yes, the first line goes like this. Tara praspara talam. So rabasa rasalam. Vasurasyam subhalam. Papagnam gopapalam. Karana karatalam. Niravid varanilam. Charu grivam uchalam. Ratamada taralam. Chetasa Pita Jalam. Shita Praspita Seelam. Varaya Varabalam. Vasudevam Subhavam.
With all your heart, please accept that beautiful boy, the son of Vasudeva, who is the joyful giver of rasa. His loud rhythmic clapping is characterized by its clarity. His sweet songs steal the mind of the hearer. His face is radiant like the moon. His neck and forehead are extremely charming. And he is trembling due to the intoxication of conjugal bliss. Dark like a host of monsoon clouds and wearing yellow garments, he beautifies those around him with his effulgence. His cooling virtues remove the suffering of material existence. Possessed of great strength, he is the destroyer of sins and the protector of the cowherd men.
Krishna. Hare Krishna. I really, really must thank those who composed this. It's really very, very much faith-giving in Srila Rupa Goswami's genius. As I saw this, my first reaction was being totally overwhelmed because I don't know Sanskrit, and I was just totally pleased to see the amount of genius. I was like an ant standing before the Himalaya mountain. And the second was a question. And I would like to pose the question because I think it will evoke a further glorification of Rupa Goswami. But I must say, I don't know the answer. So please don't turn to me and say, you tell us. This question is for both Bhujan Prabhu and Matsyavatar. I'm thinking, why did Rupa Goswami write like this? What was in his mind to sit down. Maybe he didn't even need to compose, maybe just flowed out of his pen, it's possible. But still, why would a renunciant who sits under some desire trees in Vrindavan with tears of love in his eyes, enter the world of, as I understand, the highest form of poesy, really, and present like this? What, was it a preaching strategy to get the poets on board, or he didn't write this for people who don't know Sanskrit. So what is in his mind? Can anyone answer, please?
I don't presume to know everything, but some thoughts come to mind. I think Rupa Goswami served many purposes at once. We know that as an eternal associate in the spiritual world, he's a reservoir of all the 64 arts, and these kind of things come within that category. So I see that he was composing it as a personal offering. It's a stava. It's also a stava, so it's a personal outpouring of his heart to Krishna, so he wanted to do something nice for Krishna. And when we read a lot of the Goswami's literature in the original, also we see that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they speak very cunning, double, triple meaning verses, or they use very artistic ways to express themselves, so it's all part of the culture of the spiritual world.
From the verse, the chapter that we've been reading for the last week of the path and the empowerment of Srila Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorifies the wonderful handwriting even of Rupa Goswami. But later on, which is like rows of pearls, but later on, either he or Ramananda Roy says, what is the use of poetry that doesn't make the head spin? So whose head didn't spin after looking at this? And also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this phrase came up again and again, Shakti Sancharila, that there was an empowerment. But that empowerment also meant of inspiration to describe Bhakti Rasa. There was a specific inspiration given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Srila Rupa Goswami. And also, Mahaprabhu also explains in that chapter that it is not possible to describe Bhakti Rasa without using poetic alankar and different metaphors and different poetic ways of speaking. It cannot be described exactly in prose and to have the same effect on the heart and the consciousness of the living entity as he wanted Rupa Goswami to have the effect in his descriptions of Bhakti Ras. But how? Yeah. Srila Rupa Goswami ki jai. See Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. And also, as you said, it's faith-giving too, because an ordinary human being cannot compose this. Krishna Shakti Nahivina Tarpavartana. And how could we express our thanks sufficiently to Matsya Avatar Prabhu for doing this?
It also required some genius to translate this and show it in this way.
As a continuation of Madhavananda Prabhu's point that these prayers I have read before, they were in Kusakrata Prabhu's translation with some pictures and things like that, but you just read them and pass over them. So it takes a very expert minor and to take something wonderful like that and carve it in such a way that the jewel becomes so sparkling and obvious and so effulgent that it brings so much joy and happiness to a person's heart who doesn't really even appreciate jewels very well. But this is so unavoidably wonderful, Chitra. So we have to thank you, and also the very the devotees who worked very hard on making the visual parts of the presentation, the PowerPoint. Not an easy thing to do either. So thank you also. And Prasanta?
I think...
this perhaps saved her life in the midst of all the management of a retreat like this in Vrindavan, having to meditate on the sweetness of these verses. Thank you very much.